We'd like to welcome everyone to tonight's teleseminar. My name is Mark, and I'm filling in for our usual hostess, Melinda Gerrish, out of Shirley, Indiana. She's not going to be able to join us this evening, but sends her best wishes. Karen, we have several good topics for you tonight. The first is dismounting, horsemanship for women and men, herdbound, the hissy horse, and the traffic shy horse. In addition to that, we have one urgent message that we just got in today, and I think you'd like to get started with that because this actually relates to lots of people. So if you're ready, I'll go ahead and start the first question.
That sounds great. Let's get going.
Okay. It starts off, help. When do you know if selling your horse because of your fear is the right thing to do? I've been working with my horse and taking baby steps, and today we were back to square one after making some small progress. I still have fear and feel that maybe it is time to throw in the towel because I feel I will never get over it. Please advise. Thank you.
Okay. This question, I'll just give the audience a little bit of background. This question came from an individual who has taken a couple clinics with this particular horse. I'm not going to make name or anything public because I didn't get permission to do that, but it's such a common question that I wanted to answer it on this, in this particular forum, because we do record it and we do capture the subjects and we publish the subjects, and so many people have this same question. And I think, you know, really in my opinion, it's one of the most challenging questions that we can have about our horses. So I wanted to be able to expand on this particular question in this forum. Making that decision that we're not appropriately matched to the horse that we have is a very personal decision. And I don't know that it's something that somebody else can tell you, but I think it's something that you know. It's something that will kind of bubble up and you'll know about it. And I've answered similar questions to this in the past, and I'll give you a little bit of background in this. I used to tell people, and I still believe this to an extent, I used to tell people that if you're committed to the particular horse that you have, I know that you will be able to, if you're committed to it, you can develop the skill set that you need to be able to reshape this particular behavior with this horse. Now, there's lots of factors, you know, that contribute to that. But the one that's had me kind of change my answer to this a little bit is because I'm not sure that everybody has not the level of commitment, but really knows kind of what they're in for. So, you know, depending on several different factors and also your area of interest, you may get to a point where you look at it honestly and just say, you know what, I'm not willing or maybe able to put in the time, the money, the effort, the energy, the level of frustration in the learning process, those kinds of things. You may not be in a position or a point in your life where you're able to do that or willing to do that. I think a lot of people try to do that or not give up because we feel, you know, we have a heartfelt connection with these horses. And, you know, we have to honestly say about the horse industry, you know, if you take a snapshot of what the horse industry looks like today, when a horse, you know, gets sold, you know, it used to be that you could have a horse go to another individual that does have the time and the energy and the effort, you know, and those kinds of things. But there are so many horses, you know, there's such a glut of horses in the industry, you know, available today, that there are really nice horses out there that are, you know, available for a, you know, relatively, you know, small amount of money today. So it's pretty hard to take a kind of a project horse and find the right place for it today. Now, horses are being sold. You can take your time and make sure that horse goes to the right home and the right situation, you know, the right kind of things. But at the same time, I have to factor in, like, you know, my own personal experience. I'm not a person that sells my horses. I just, you know, I've not had great experiences with that. And I've sold horses to really great people. You know, it was a horse that was maybe retired or I wasn't using it, you know, and the people really wanted it. But those people, you know, other people's lives change as well. So it wasn't the people maybe I sold the horse to, but when their life conditions changed, it was the people that they sold the horse on to. So that's just me. You know, I'm not the person to sell horses, and that's why I'm very particular about the horses that I purchase, because that's just me. I have them for life. Have I had the horses that were mismatched to my ability at the time? Absolutely. Absolutely, I have been in those situations. But I had the interest, the time, the resources. I made the time and the resources because I had such a high level of interest to develop my skills as you know, an aspiring horseman, to be able to do something to be able to reshape the behavior of those horses. So, you know, that's been my journey and that's my route. Now, I can't put that expectation on somebody else because that's not realistic. Everybody is on their own journey. We make our own decisions. We have our own pathway. And really, once you make the decision, the rest is detail. So now I just wrote something. I do a weekly comment on Facebook, and the last one I did talks about frustration. And the thing to know about frustration with horses is that frustration is a part of the learning process, and everybody has felt it at some time or another. But the good news about frustration is that it often is it's in direct relation to when we're exhausting what we know. And when we exhaust what we know, that's the point, that's kind of a tipping point where once we exhaust what we know, then our mind is open to new information and doing things differently. So there's a couple of things in this particular question, because, you know, I play like a little detective here. When I hear somebody say they're taking baby steps, to me, from the horse's point of view, when we take those kind of baby steps and we break it down, that's not a bad thing to do. But sometimes it gets to such baby steps that the horse gets bored. There's no challenge. You know, horses love the interaction. Horses love to kind of, you know, they have so much energy and so much power. And, you know, we buy these horses because of that. But we want to somehow say, hey, you know, I don't want you to use it. You know, it scares me when you use it because it's so big and powerful and my skill set isn't there yet. But if you go too slow with a horse, it's like if you go too slow with children. You know, the kids that are in trouble in school, they're not the less intelligent kids. It's the ones that are so intelligent that the rest of the world has a hard time keeping up with them. So oftentimes, just trusting yourself and giving you and your horse more to do. Do more. Challenge yourself. Change it up, mix it up, you know, get interesting, get provocative, you know, do it safely. And I know this particular person has been to, you know, a couple clinics. Have that horse far away from you, you know, do the things I've showed you, you know, hands on a clinic to keep yourself, you know, safe and interesting, be interesting, you know, for you and your horse. Now, if you've gotten to a point where you feel like you and your horse are just in a pattern and you're stuck and that kind of thing, and you need some help, you can always send. I have a video coaching option, and you can contact my office through email or call the toll-free number and talk about that, where I can videotape and see what you're doing with your course. And, you know, with downloads and things like that, we can do it over email. You don't even have to send a tape or a, you know, anything physical in the mail anymore. We can do this electronically oftentimes. Very easily, and I can give you some suggestions. Now, there are some other things that I suggest to people is if this particular horse is too challenging for you, but you want to keep the horse, develop your skills, you know, with more confidence, you know, if you're in a position to take on a new horse and find the horse that's going to be the type of horse that's going to give you the confidence, the horse that's nice and relaxed, has a very confident nature to it, that's, you know, maybe been around a lot of things, has been out on a ranch This particular person with this horse is up in an area in Montana where I would think that there are a lot of really good ranch horses. Not that every ranch horse is the ideal horse, but a lot of ranch horses have been used for a real job. And they are, you know, well-broke horses. They're confident horses. They've seen a lot. They've done a lot. They've been expected to do a lot. And that may be the horse that needs to come into your life so that you can develop the skills so that the other horse, you can have an interaction. As your skills develop, you can go back to that first horse and have something to offer that horse. One of the things, you know, I've had a number of people that I've said, it's okay to get another horse. It's okay to, you know, look at this horse and say, hey, I'm in fear. I feel that I could be hurt with this horse. And that's an indication that, you know, honestly, you could. But, you know, even a gentle horse you can get hurt on. So, you know, but don't feel guilty or that you've done a disservice to this horse by looking at it honestly and saying, you know what, I don't know that I have the time, the interest, or the resources to be able to develop the skill set that this horse needs. There may be another home that, you know, would just love to have this horse, and this horse would flourish in that situation, in a different scenario and situation with a different person. That's not a failure. That's an honest look at things. But finding the horse that's going to really meet your needs, I have a very simple equation of finding the ideal horse. So there's no such thing as a perfect horse. That's like saying the perfect child or the perfect spouse or the perfect, you know, there's no such thing as perfection, I think. You know, myself, I'm a recovering perfectionist. But there is an ideal horse. And the ideal horse for somebody who, say, is recreational, doesn't really want to, you know, go out there and ride budding broncos or start colts, you know, things like that, is the simple equation is when you want to find a really good horse, a horse that is going to be just the right ideal horse for you, commit to looking at 10 horses. Okay, if you look at 10 horses, it'd be pretty hard not to find really a good horse for what your needs are. The other part of that, if you want to find a really great horse, I mean outstanding, commit to looking at 20. And it's a very simple formula because you can talk about breed and type and conformation and activity and all these kinds of things, but all those things work themselves out if you become more comfortable and more familiar in the interview process. And it's not just, is that horse right for you? Are you the right person for that horse and those current needs? So, you know, there's so many horses out there that really nice horses. I mean, there's a sale that is coming to Queen Creek area in Arizona, which is, you know, my home area here, on November 19th. And you can go online and look at www.cowboyshorsesale.com. And they're doing a performance ranch horse sale. And this is the second year they've had it here in Arizona. I went to it last year to meet some folks and see the quality of horses. And all these horses are, you know, ranch-raised, you know, working horses. And some of these horses, you know, maybe they won't go in and win the big bucks in the show ring. But, but a lot of them are. Let me tell you, this is the one sale that I have seen the highest number of horses that are really, you know, some of them are finished horses, if you're familiar with that term, a finished horse. And these horses have good minds. They're sound-legged. Or, you know, if they weren't sound, the cowboys wouldn't be able to use them. They sound in mind and body. So, you know, I talked to quite a few of the cowboys that brought their horses into the sale last year. And they're all, you know, very well-mannered. They're very well-spoken. They're very quality horses, quality people that do really nice work with these horses. And there are so many horses in there that would just make somebody a really nice, well-minded, you know, trail horse, recreational horse. And I don't think that the recreational rider always looks at these kinds of horses for them. They think, oh, well, those horses are for high-level performance and high-level this and, you know, that kind of thing. And we tend to go out and get the less expensive, you know, recreational horse. And I ask people, well, what do you do with your horses? And they say, oh, I just trail ride. Well, to me, trail riding, recreational riding, is one of the highest demands you can put on a horse. You know, you can take it, people pay big bucks for the horse to go in the show ring, but, you know, that horse usually doesn't have to deal with a, you know, upside down bathtub on a trail or, you know, a covey of quail flurrying out from under the bushes in front of them. You know, these ranch horses, you know, really do. So, you know, to me, looking at the recreational horse as a performance horse and looking at the background of that individual to have the kind of foundation to offer the recreational rider the enjoyment. I mean, that's what we have these horses for, is to enjoy. And if you're not enjoying what you're doing, then, you know, do something else. So it's your decision. But what I want to encourage people to do, there's quite a few people, like I said, I used to tell people, oh, you have the horse that you have, and you can learn it, and you can develop your skills to be able to, you know, one day feel safe and confident and overcome your fear, move through your fear, these kinds of things. You can. That's a true statement. But is it okay to look at it honestly and say, that's not for me? The route that I need to take to be able to achieve that is not something that I'm willing or able to do at this time in my life. And that's okay too. So you make your own decision on that. And that's why I wanted to answer it in this teleseminar, because it isn't something that's a quick answer. It's something that, you know, it swirls around in your head for weeks, maybe months, maybe even years. But I'll tell you what, there are people that have sent me emails and said, you know, Karen, thanks for removing the guilt from thinking I was letting my horse down. I found a wonderful home for it. I found this new horse, and we are just, you know, moving forward. It's so enjoyable. I feel so much safer. You know, I can go and do things and really enjoy my time with my horse. That's okay, you know, to do that too. So either way, but that's your own personal decision. And that's why I try not to tell people, you know, what I would do isn't necessarily what that person should do. So I hope that that answers that question. I know it doesn't give you a solid answer, but, you know, trust your gut. That's one thing that I tell people. If you can just trust your gut in these kinds of decisions, you know, usually everything will really play out really well for you. And if you try something and it doesn't work, you know, try something else. It's okay to change your mind down the road as well. So, but do something. Safety for yourself, safety and enjoyment are the two most important things with horses. Life's just too short to not have both of those.
Thank you for that answer, Karen. The next question we have is from Jane about dismounting. I'm looking for some advice on dismounting my 13-year-old Pink Mare. She hasn't been ridden much in the past 2 years. I'm now finding the time to work with her. Approximately 1 year ago, there was an incident where a young girl came to my place to ride her for me, and the horse dumped her in 30 seconds. Unfortunately, the horse was immediately unsaddled and set out to pasture. My problem is this. While the horse stands still for mounting, she gets real nervous and won't stand when I am preparing to dismount. It's nothing drastic, but she's moving forward and tenses up. I thought the saddle was the issue, but I've tried just sliding off without the assistance of the left stirrup. I didn't have this problem with her prior to the dumping incident a year ago. I listened to your August 2010 teleseminar where you discussed problems with mounting, but I'm not sure how to incorporate that into dismounting. How should I be handling her once I get off when she's moving around? I have tried simply just sitting on her without moving, relaxed, and the moment I begin to give her signs of my dismounting, she gets real nervous. Please help.
Okay. You know, usually my answers, if you've, you know, listened to past teleseminars, there's a combination of things that you can do both on the ground and on the horse's back. On the ground, get the horse used to the movement of the stirrups. You know, start with a halter and lead, so there's no bridle, nothing, you know, metal in the horse's mouth that's going to you know, cause the horse any kind of worry, but just a halter and lead, saddle your horse, do all the things on the ground, the riding from the ground that I, you know, show on the video, get that horse mentally and emotionally connected to you, okay? One of the reasons that horses get nervous with us or things that we're asking of them is because we haven't done enough things to develop that horse's positive opinion of us. So that's where I would start. When you get to that actual mounting, you know, part of it, just take the stirrup, you know, have your lead line at an effective position so you can tip the nose if you need to, and just hold that stirrup standing on the ground and just swing it back and forth. Just swing it side to side. And, you know, if the horse gets bothered and she needs to move her feet, good. Just relax. Keep swinging it. If she moves away too fast from you and you have to let go of the stirrup, just let go. Don't get drug around by it. That's not going to help her build her confidence because you always get do-overs. And just keep walking up, rubbing her on the neck with the hand that's holding the lead line. Just be really relaxed about it and just keep swinging it. The horses are scared of anything new, different, sudden, or abrupt. But the good news is they very quickly adjust or desensitize to anything new, different, sudden, or abrupt. So the more movement you do, the more confident she'll become in you. So, you know, kind of at the end there when you said, well, I hold still until she holds still, that's all good, but it's pretty hard to hold still and dismount or mount or ride, you know, for that matter. So I like to do this with horses. When I start cold, I take that stirrup and I just hold it and just relax. Just keep kind of swinging it. Then the moment the horse stands still, you're tipping the nose, so she's, you know, the horse isn't, you know, you don't want the horse to just go out in a circle. You want to just keep tipping the nose. As soon as the horse starts to slow down or stand still, let the horse stand straight again. Just kind of extend that arm so that the horse's nose isn't bent so much, and just stop. Just stop with the stirrup, let it down, and give the horse a rub, and let that horse think about it for a minute. And then just pick up your stirrup again, be ready to tip the nose if you need to, just start swinging it again, and keep swinging it as best you can. If the horse's feet need to move, let the horse drift while you keep swinging the stirrup as best as you can, and when the horse slows down or stops, release that motion, just give that horse a rub and let him think about it again. And pretty soon that horse realizes that motion doesn't mean that they need to move their feet, okay? That's how you shape behavior, because if you do any kind of motion and the horse moves and then you stop the motion, the horse in that pattern of behavior, if the sequence is I move and it stops, then you've actually reinforced the movement, if that makes sense. So when the horse is moving or drifting, if you can kind of think of the horse drifting, you know, if you keep that motion in there, pretty soon that horse says, well, what am I moving for? This thing's not stopping, and it's not hurting me. And so maybe I'll stand still, and then the movement stops. Pretty soon the horse starts developing a new pattern and says, movement doesn't, or this motion doesn't necessarily mean I need to move my feet. So once you do that on both sides, be sure to do everything both sides on the ground first. When the horse starts getting comfortable with that, then it's that same thing I talked about with the mounting, is putting your foot in the stirrup, going up halfway, stepping down, giving that horse a rub, and I wouldn't even mount the horse. I would just go on and off, on and off, on and off, keep rubbing the horse. Pretty soon the horse just starts going, well, I guess they just crawl all over me and there's no point, you know, in moving. If the horse loses confidence, you know, up on the back, when you go to step down, they're bothered, just you get do-overs, just do it again. The tendency that most people have is when they go to ride the horse, they mount one time and they dismount one time. And if the horse isn't confident in some of those things, the easy answer is do it a lot. You know, instead of going, well, I'm going to go out for a ride, so I'm just going to get on any old way I can, and I'm going to get off in any old way I can, and that's the last thing. You know, then the horse thinks, you know, it becomes part of their routine. So when I ride a horse and the horse isn't okay or doesn't stand still while mounting or is bothered when I dismount, if I get off a horse, even my own horse, if for some reason, who knows what happened, I dismount and my horse moves its feet, I don't just put him up and put him away. I go, oop, there's a little thing right there. Let me just on and off, on and off, on and off. You know, and it takes, what, 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, maybe 30 minutes, maybe an hour. But to me, having that horse be right in the mind is more important than what I think I need to do that day or what I thought I needed to do. So when I go out there with horses, I may have the idea in my mind that I want to go on a ride or go do riding, but to me, it's the interaction and the developing the confidence in horses. So you may go out there and think you need to ride the horse, but what that horse really needs is for you to spend the time, whether it's an hour or 2 hours or whatever it is, until that horse is right about mounting and dismounting. So sometimes people say, oh, well, you know, did you go for a ride? And I said, well, yeah, I didn't go more than, you know, 30 feet, you know, in that time, because that's not, the horse didn't need to go for a ride. The horse needed more mental development, mental and emotional development than physical. But that usually helps, and it usually doesn't take really very long for a horse to really start to get confident and comfortable and relaxed when mounting and dismounting if you take that time, you know. And sometimes it gets worse right before it gets better. I want to mention that because I had a horse in a demo in Ohio a couple of years ago, and this horse had difficulty mounting. And I asked for the horse to come back and be my demo horse at another demo because I had 1 hour and that horse got better. The audience could see that that horse had made tremendous progress, but I needed another session with that horse. And kind of by the beginning of that next session, the next day, boy, it just got really nice and really solid for that horse. But I spent most of the demo talking to the audience with my left foot in the stirrup, bending that horse and doing my best to stay with that horse until that horse relaxed and then took my foot out of the stirrup. You know, and then it turned into dismounting. It was kind of the same thing. But, you know, to me, that's as interesting or even more so than sitting on the back of the horse enjoying the view. I love that too. But when I have an opportunity to help a horse's mind be more confident and have the owner be more safe, to me, that's just the biggest thrill, the most rewarding interaction that I can have with a horse. So take that time with it and see if you can't just kind of flood that horse with just the mounting sessions, mounting and dismounting sessions until that issue just becomes, you know, a thing of the past. And if you'll do that, you know, every day and take the entire time that it takes, kind of every session you go into, it'll take about half the amount of time as the first session and then half the amount of time the next time and half the amount of time. But if you'll do something, that's one of the best advice one of my mentors gave me. If you'll, you know, take that time, do something, take, you know, a challenge like mounting and dismounting, do that every day for 7 days in a row. And then every other day for another 7 days in a row. And then occasionally after that, that issue will be gone because you've taken a pattern of behavior and overlaid a new pattern of behavior so strongly that that issue really becomes a thing of the past. And believe me, mounting and dismounting, besides being in a horse trailer with the horse, when you're mounting and dismounting, you're out of balance. And when your leg is halfway over the back of that horse, you're in a very unbalanced and a very vulnerable position. So it's really an important thing. I'm really glad you sent in that question for people because it gives me the opportunity to put the emphasis that mounting and dismounting safely really deserve.
Great. Thank you very much for that answer, Karen. The next question is simply this. Do you have any DVDs or encouragement for men? Thank you, Charlie.
No, I'm sorry. You know, I get this question, Charlie. I really appreciate this because, you know, when I say it's horsemanship for women, it doesn't exclude men. It's not an exclusion of men. It's simply horsemanship from a woman's point of view. I relate it to things that really click for how women think and process information. Generally speaking, this doesn't apply to everybody, but generally speaking, men want to know how to do something. And women not only need to know how, but why. So horsemanship for women really developed not because I didn't, you know, men aren't welcome at my clinic. I've never had a clinic, you know, where men were not welcome. I've had people say to me that, you know, when I've had my extended courses, my week-long and two-week-long courses, that I should exclude men from being there. And it was interesting because it was men suggesting that to me. And I said, well, I don't know that I agree with that. And I'll just give you a little bit of background with it. The person said, well, I've talked to other clinicians who have given, you know, make it a part of their business to give women's only clinic, you know, where no men are allowed, you know, to be there. But it's interesting, they're men giving the clinic. And I've, not to say that it's a bad thing or anything like that, but this person who was saying, you need to exclude men because I've talked to these, you know, clinicians and asked them, you know, why they do that. And their answer was that, well, you know, you have a group of women with their horses, and when a man shows up, when a man comes into the mix, that the women instantly become competitive with the man. And when I was told that, I looked and I said, well, gosh, I've had, you know, I've studied, you know, been in the student position and the teaching position, you know, side by side with men and women and, you know, kids and, you know, every kind of mix. And I don't know that I've ever felt competitive with another person in a learning environment like that. I don't know that, and I've never witnessed women, or women have never expressed to me that a man in the group makes them feel competitive, that they're going to compete with that man's ability. And so it's interesting in that dynamic where I was kind of taken aback by that. And I said, huh, you know, I hadn't heard that before. And I asked this person's wife to come over, who was riding in a two-week-long course with me. And I asked her to come over, and I asked her, I said, you know, can I ask you a question, you know, in front of it? And I said, if there were a man in this group that you were coming to ride in and a man was part of the group, would you feel competitive in any way with that person? Would that be a problem for you? And she looked at me and says, no, absolutely not. Why are you even asking me that? And her husband was quite surprised. He said, well, you know, this person, you know, said that that's how women feel. Now, and I think people can kind of see that whenever I've explained this scenario or given this example, all the women look at it and go, no, I've never felt like, you know, a man showing up would make me feel competitive. I think, this is just my suspicion, I think that's maybe how a man would feel. You know, another man shows up and then there's a you know, a thing there. Not always, but I think it's more likely that a man would feel that way to another man showing up than a woman would. And those are just, you know, generally, you know, speaking. So I've had men in all of my clinics, at the demos, you know, buying my DVDs, you know, learning this method of horsemanship, and really horsemanship for women is really simply just horsemanship explained from a woman's, you know, point of view. And what's really interesting is that the type of men that are turned off by the title or put off by it or, you know, something in that fashion or some way, they're usually not the type of individual that would be attracted to my style of teaching anyway. So I have had to kind of laugh about it over the years because some of the men that come along and they go, well, I don't like how you teach or what, you know, you get all kinds of feedback. And I just go, oh, did you see the demo? Well, no. Well, have you seen my clinics? Have you seen, no. Have you seen my video? No. I haven't seen any of that. I just don't like it. I go, that's great. Thank you for sharing, you know. So, you know, I think when you're an educator and you're presenting your opinion and your style of presentation and your format, you know, it's not for everybody. But if you can look beyond the name or the title or whatever that means to you and just look at the horsemanship and apply it. I've had so many men come over after a demo or watching their wife in the clinic or riding during the clinic, and they say, well, I know that this is for women, but boy, I really got a lot out of this. I just want to tell you that it's for men too. And I just nod and I say, I agree. I'm glad that you, you know, took a look at it, and I'm glad that there are some things that, you know, you could draw from it and glean from that. So, you know, I don't know. I have fun with it. You know, horsemanship for women is something, you know, very heartfelt, and I don't think it's as complex as, you know, people want to make it out to be, but I think it's interesting how the type of ideas or impressions, you know, that people take away from it. But the one thing that I do find most people take away is they go, wow, this person is going to recognize, you know, my learning style and at my own pace. It puts a lot of people at ease to know that, you know, I'm a woman and I'm going to teach in a way that I think really helps women build their confidence and move through their fears, just like that last question. You know, it's your decision. Here's the things to consider about it, but trust your gut and trust yourself. And the biggest thing, you know, I think women, we struggle with is we have this little voice in our head that's, you know, discussing and processing and, you know, analyzing and calling our friends to reanalyze. I don't think that men really have that mental process going on. So it's a big difference. It's a big difference in our learning styles. So that's really all it is. So horsemanship for women, the word men, M-E-N, is in there too. So it's all inclusive.
All right. Thank you, Karen, for that answer to that question. The next one is from Brenda. She says, I've been to several of your clinics, and you remain my favorite clinician. My question is, how do I keep my gelding, who is out with several mares, from getting herd bound? When I take him to shows, he kicks on the stall and calls to the mares continuously. When I take him out by himself, he won't quit looking around for them and calling to them. He refuses to perform and acts out until we take him back. If you take one of the mares out of the stalls without him, he kicks so hard on the stall that it sounds like he's going to knock it down. Thanks for any help, Brenda.
Yeah. Well, you know, when a horse gets left behind, there's not a whole lot, you know, that you can do. The thing that I find with herd-bound horses is to first recognize, you know, that's a horse's survival mechanism, is to fall in love with the lead horse, because that is in direct relation to their level of survival. So what we look at as, you know, unwanted behavior or undesirable behavior, you know, in the scenario we have the horse in, you know, you have to recognize that in the wild, that's the kind of behavior that horse would survive by. So when we can appreciate the behavior as a survival mechanism for a prey animal, then we can start going, okay, I want this horse to be that bound, herd bound to me. Okay? So the horse doesn't get herd bound to the horses kind of below them in the pecking order. Everybody's familiar with horses being prey animals. There's a hierarchy in the herd. And the horse gets attached to the horse that demonstrates leadership in the herd. And this is the thing, and a lot of the basis of the premise of the psychology of my program is to develop our leadership skills, our quality of leadership skills, so that when that horse is with us, they're completely riveted and attached to us and what we're asking of them. We're able to hold a conversation, not a conversation of, oh, where do you want to go today, Bobo? It's a, hey, we're going here, we have a job, we're, you know, doing this, and not just at the horse show, but in everything that we're asking this horse to do. That, you know, quality of leadership, there's kind of good news and bad news. The good news is that leadership is a learnable skill. The bad news is that to develop leadership in a horse's eyes, it oftentimes goes against the nature of people, and in particular women. And this is probably back to Charlie's question of, you know, what's the difference, you know, is there horsemanship for men as well as women? Women really struggle, not all women, but oftentimes women struggle in the position of leadership. Our nature is, for a lot, not all, nature for women is to be more in a support role. And when we're in a position of leadership, a lot of times, because women are, we're not taught that from a young age, we misunderstand it as aggression. And it's not aggressive, you know, or dominant. And that's a common word used in education in the horse industry, is to say, well, we have to be the dominant horse. Well, to me, dominance demands submission. And I don't think that we get the most from our horse when a horse submits to us. They will submit to us. That every day in the USA, that, you know, approach is used with horses, and it does work. But that horse is not giving you its very best. So what I like to replace dominance with is leadership, because leadership invites that horse to surrender to you. Surrender is different. Because surrender is a choice. I want that horse to surrender their mind, their body, their power, their energy, you know, to me. I mean, that's, but it's not in a demanding, dominant, you will submit to me. It's in a, I'm going to have such a strong quality of leadership that that horse is going to go, man, I am going with her, hubba hubba. I think the world of her because she has demonstrated the kind of leadership that, you know, a good mama does, you know. And, you know, when, I don't know, many people, you know, if you're around young horses, sometimes you're around a young horse that had a dam that was, didn't have a lot of leadership, and that little, as a young horse, could do whatever he wanted. And boy, they can turn into some really difficult horses because they don't have the leadership, that example of leadership, you know, in their lives. So developing that and that ability so that that horse becomes so engaged in you and what you're doing, to me, that's the real answer. So can you prevent a horse from becoming herd-bound with another horse? Not that I know of. And I have that. I have my horses in herd situations. When I'm on the road, I have my two primary horses, Brigante and Debutante, and they travel together 24/7. Can I say, hey, don't get herd-bound with each other? No, you know, not that I've found. But when I step into the picture and I take one of the horses out for something, then that horse is completely riveted on me. And if they're not engaged with me, then that means I need to step up, you know, what I'm doing or what I'm asking of them. And it's not like, you know, hey, I own you, I feed you, you know, I give you the best care, I pay all the bills, and, you know, I get no respect. You know, we sound like Rodney Dangerfield, or probably most, you know, mothers with their kids. But if we have that kind of interaction with a horse, then that horse gets that, it transfers that attachment that they would have to another horse onto us. So, you know, I can only describe that as, you know, the ultimate of where you're moving towards. And how to get there is, again, like in the last question, is to go back to that foundation. Find the things that develop your skills and build confidence in your horse. Find challenges. Do things, you know, take what you know and apply it to a variety of challenges so that your horse has the opportunity to say, wow, when we change environments or we change scenarios or I'm not with the other horses, I can still count on my leader to give me the direction of where I need to be, how fast I need to be there, you know, give me that direction of movement and motion. And that is what builds that relationship with the horses, just like humans. The more connection we have with people through our interaction and our communication and even moving through challenges. You know, we go through challenges in our lives. You know, one day everything's, you know, peachy rosy and, you know, you don't know what's going to happen by the end of the day. You know, things have have happened today, and I'm keeping Melinda's family in our prayers. She had a family emergency. We think everybody's okay, but, you know, we go along and we move through those types of situations, and we become stronger for it. So that's what I try to encourage people to do with their horses, is find the things that challenge them, not just the regular routine drills where the horse just can do it, you know, with her eyes closed. Mix it up, change it up, challenge it, back it off, look for precision, look for lightness, you know, find the things and build that horse's confidence in your ability to communicate with them. That's the thing that's going to take that nature to be herd-bound and have them become herd-bound onto you and what you're asking them to do. So hopefully that's kind of a big question for what seems like a simple answer, but it's all those little things that are going to make a difference from when you're leading the horse, when you're feeding the horse, when you're picking up their feet, when you're saddling the horse, how you saddle a horse, how you bridle the horse. You know, there's so many different aspects to our interaction. It's not just when we have a leg on each side and we're a straddle this, you know, 1,200-pound animal. It's not then that you get the connection with the horse. It's in everything that you do. It's a way of being. I was with my niece here, my 9-year-old niece, and we watched Karate Kid, and the recent one with Jackie Chan in it and Will Smith's son. And he talked about Kung Fu. He said, you know, Kung Fu is in everything. And I really struggle, you know, when I watch movies and I draw these parallels into what I experience with horses. You know, this is almost like Kung Fu with horses. It's in everything that you do. So, you know, if you're not familiar with my program, you know, get the DVDs or have them, go back to the DVDs and really watch it. Really, you know, watch it again and over and just see, you know, that way of interacting with horses that's going to create that attraction to you. And what you'll find is a completely different experience with that horse. Now, again, when they get left behind, when I take one horse out and that horse is with me, the horse that gets left behind might be kicking or, you know, really having problems with the stall. I don't know what to do with that horse except, you know, they just sometimes have to endure those things. But when I come back and switch horses and take that horse out and that horse is now with me, then the behavior should be, again, that connection to the leadership qualities that I'm offering to that horse and the interaction that I'm engaged in at that time. So hopefully that answers that question, but, you know, really reflect on that horse's behavior is a survival mechanism for a prey animal. In the wild, that horse would be voted most likely to survive in the wild because of that behavior. So when you respect the behavior, then you can learn how to integrate and access that behavior to something else more desirable for you.
A friend brought her horse over to ride with me the other day. I intended on riding my 15-year-old Percheron Thoroughbred Cross, who had not had much work for a month. He can have hissy or bully moments and is usually calm and relaxed on his home turf. From the moment I put the saddle pad on him, he was in a foul mood. He has hacked out with this horse before. When I walked him out to where my friend was going to mount, he was wired. I mounted him from a hay wagon, so pretty much stepped over into the saddle. He danced all over the place, sideways, back, forward, rounded his back, wouldn't let me put my feet in the stirrups without jumping and bouncing. I decided to ride him around a bit in a small field that we were in, and he wouldn't calm down. He did some figure eights. I'm 65, and it's a long way down. I would have liked to have taken him right into the round pen, tack and all, but my friend only had so much time, so I put him away and got a pony. It bothered me that he got to be free after such behavior, and I wondered if I set myself up for trouble down the line. 2 days later, I took him out, and he was his quiet self and every day thereafter. How could I have handled this situation better? Should I have told my friend, sorry, I know you drove 40 minutes to get here, but I have to deal with this situation. Judy.
Okay, well, I'm going to answer them separately because they're kind of, you know, different scenarios, pretty much different scenarios. The first one, and sorry, tell me the name of the first one.
Judy.
Judy. I really want to compliment Judy for not riding that horse. Yay! I do, because to me, that's one of the hardest things, you know, for people to do, because we think, oh, we got off that horse and that horse won. And, you know, I've asked, you know, huge audiences, you know, who's heard this? And, you know, people raise their hand. And I go, well, you know, does anybody know the current standings of that competition? Like, you know, who wins? To me, when the person makes the decision to get off a horse, when a horse is not mentally and emotionally right, everybody wins. Okay. Now, in that scenario, she put the horse away and went out on a ride on a pony and recognized that that horse was in a foul mood, came back, rode the horse, and he was just his nice, you know, natured self. You know, to me, there are just times when you need to just step down and go, okay, I'm going to live another day, you know, to sort this out again. And to me, it sounds like you did everything right. I can't say, no, it might have been, you know, say to your friend, gosh, you know, I need to spend this time, you know, sorting things out and helping this horse and get back on the ground and do more interaction on the ground to get the horse more mentally, emotionally connected and those kind of things. But you had a factor in there that was a time factor. You know, your friend drove out. They spent 40 minutes getting there. You wanted to go on a ride. So you switched horses. You know, I don't think that it's that big of a deal. A lot of people make that a great big deal. Now, if you did that another time and another time and another time, yeah, you'd be developing a pattern. It sounds like you went out, didn't, you know, spend a lot of time or a lot of time lapsed or anything, went out, rode the horse again, and you went, huh, you're just having a bad day. Sometimes horses are just like us. They're just having a bad day. There's nothing wrong with taking the saddle off that horse and putting it on, you know, another one, if, you know, with those kind of time restrictions, you know. So, you know, I guess it's back to that thing of, you know, well, what would be the perfect way to respond to this scenario? Well, with all things considered, I can't say that there was anything else that I would recommend to do. I think you made really nice decisions there. And it doesn't seem like it's developed a pattern or a long-term, you know, behavioral pattern in the horse. If it happens again and you don't have that factor of having a friend that's come out and you have, you know, these other factors going, it may be something where I'd recommend, hey, you know, step off. If the horse isn't right, number one, don't put your precious self up there. I mean, that's the big answer. You know, to me, you know, if a horse isn't mentally or emotionally right, just don't put your precious self up on the back of a horse that is not mentally, emotionally, you know, interacting with you for whatever reason. Just get yourself down on the ground. You know, decline the ride. Say, I'm sorry, but, you know, you guys go on and, you know, and you'll get people, they go, oh, come on, he's all right, just get on. Well, I can't tell you how many times I've had people in an audience raise their hand when they've been in that exact situation and been sorry later because they said, oh, he'll be good, he'll be all right, you know, and then it's not. So there's no reason to put yourself at risk just to go do what you thought, you know, you had in mind for the day. So I think you did a great thing there. I wouldn't have changed a thing.
I have a 7-year-old quarter horse gelding that is traffic shy most of the time. I have tried many approaches and have not made progress in correcting this annoying behavior. Basically, I now just move off the road as far as I can until the vehicle has passed by. Is there any tried and true method of getting a horse over this? Thank you, Colleen.
One of the things, you know, in my DVDs, in Riding from the Ground and Riding from Above, is being able to develop your skills at communicating with your legs, your seat, your hands, your reins, okay? And it's not just putting pressure on, but it's allowing that horse to find their bubble of comfort, okay? So if for your answer with the traffic is go back to the ground and then to the basic riding to really develop that communication of direction and speed with your steady pressure, using that to communicate with the horse. Because here's the thing. When I'm riding a horse along traffic, And if we understand that it's the release, the timing of the release that shapes the behavior, if traffic's coming by and we stop the horse or we turn and face it or something like that, and it could be traffic or it could be, you know, dogs or, you know, all kinds of scenarios. Or say the horse is looking at something that they're unfamiliar, say, you know, stripe on the, you know, they're crossing the road and there's stripes on the road or something like that. If every time we see something that the horse goes, hey, what's that? And we stop and get in our mind, what we think we're doing is we're giving the horse time to get relaxed and see that it's not going to hurt them. But I've seen this really develop a pattern inadvertently that, you know, the horse gets this thing of he's looking over here and he's looking over there and he's looking over there, because what we have a tendency to do is to stop and soothe them, okay? So I've seen horses that have very strong patterns of fear behavior, so much so that I've asked the owner, well, tell me, what do you do when your horse gets afraid? And they say, well, I stop and I soothe him. Well, what we're doing is we're inadvertently creating a comfort, an element of comfort in that horse's emotional state of fear. And so it can actually create a pattern of fear when we do that. It seems the opposite. It seems like, you know, if somebody gets afraid, well, I'll give an example with a child. You know, if a child, you know, falls down, and the first thing they do is they look at their mom. And if the mom's response is to turn around and go, oh, darling, oh, dear, oh, 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 and, you know, fawn all over, oh, 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 then the child starts to cry. See? Then the child, then it becomes this emotional attachment. But if a mom turns around and goes, you know, my mom looked down and said, did you crap the sidewalk? Let's look. You know, here I am, a little kid looking for a crack in the sidewalk, you know. And she'd look, she'd go like, yep. Yeah, here, off we go. And she made no big deal about that. Okay, and everybody is familiar with that example. Our response to their behavior shapes that behavior. So it's not to say you just go out there and pretend traffic isn't coming. What you do is you go out there with your higher level of communication that you have. Like, you can move the hip over a step with your leg. You can move that front end over. You can, you know, help that horse be where he needs to be, and then have in mind when you're riding down the road that this is where we're going, then traffic's coming along, and I'm not going to do anything for the traffic. In fact, in my mind, I'm going, what traffic? All I know is we're going on this path over here. And if you go off this path, then you're going to run into pressure from my feet or my legs or my reins, and then you're going to get the release of pressure when you're back on that path that I have in mind. But a lot of times we don't understand that that's the focus that the horse feels, okay? And that's where I talked about, if you listen to last month's teleseminar, I talked about using invisible cattle, because that gives people that intention that a horse needs. But a lot of times, say, traffic comes by, a common pattern that we do is we go, oh, here comes traffic, and we get nervous, and we kind of tighten up on things, and our seat gets a little bit tight, and maybe we turn and face it, and the horse goes, man, every time traffic comes by, my human gets scared, okay? So it's something important to, you know, be able to develop and do. So when I go along and I'm riding my horse and traffic or something, you know, comes by and that horse says, ooh, I'm a little worried about that. Say maybe the traffic's on my left, the horse drifts to the right, he's going to run into pressure from my right rein and my right leg. Because it says, hey, you're going to fall off a cliff over here, you know, get back to where you need to be. Even if the horse can't do it that time. But if we just let him drift and kind of, you know, swirl around there without any pressure to let that horse know where he needs to be, a lot of times those patterns, fear patterns, can develop inadvertently, and we're not even realize that we're kind of, you know, participating in it. Now, it could be something where, you know, there's patterns of behavior that emerge, or maybe a different approach, you know, without seeing the situation, without seeing the communication, you know, of you with your horse, this is the best answer I can get, you know, I can give you without actually seeing it. So if this makes sense to you, a lot of times these kind of general responses make sense and people click and they go, oh my gosh, that's exactly what I'm doing. But if it doesn't, if you say, gosh, I've studied your DVDs, I'm moving the hip, I'm doing all the things I described, you know, send me a DVD, you know, or send me a video. Take advantage of that video coaching and let me watch you. And usually what I can do is if I can't kind of guess at it, you know, I'm not guessing at it, it's you know, pretty common in, you know, questions. That's why I do the teleseminars. But if this doesn't hit the mark and you need more help, use that video, because once I see what you're doing, I can usually, you know, see a little bit position or a little bit more pressure or less pressure or the timing of your release, you know, those kinds of things I can see on the video coaching much more clearly. But usually what you can do is take that idea, that concept that I'm giving you, and kind of self-assess yourself and say, am I really giving that horse the direction that he needs to go? So when I'm riding along and traffic's coming or a train's coming or, you know, who knows what's coming, I just, in my mind, I think, you know, what train, what car, what traffic? I don't see traffic. All I know is I have this place where I need you to be, and if you're not in that place, then my communication needs to be responding, not just with the pressure, but the release of the pressure where I need you to be. And if you're consistent with that, you know, like I said in the last question, with everything that you do, whether you're leading the horse or feeding the horse or, you know, riding the horse, you know, any of those things in competitions, if you have that kind of communication with the horse, you'll be able to keep that connection and that interaction from a position of leadership, you know, in any kind of scenario with your horse. So I hope that helps you give some ideas and also a place to go if that idea, if you need more details, more information, you know, please contact me. I'd love to help you in any way I can.
Okay, Karen, our hour is up already.
Wow.
Are there any final thoughts you'd like to share with us before we go tonight?
No, just that I'm really excited. In Arizona this weekend is a Festival of Horses out in Queen Creek, Arizona. And I've got, I think, four different demo horses that I've never met before with different scenarios. So it's kind of like a teleseminar, but I get to actually interact with the horses and people can see and ask questions and, you know, get these kind of examples that, you know, the teleseminars are great. It can reach more people, but if you're in Arizona or in neighboring state and can get over to the Arizona Festival of Horses, it's a fantastic weekend. This is, I think, their fourth year, maybe fifth year for this expo. And I really look forward to this one because this is the expo that I do. You know, traveling all over the country, this is the one I get to do at home. So it's really nice. I get to see my family and old friends, and I just really have a great time. I'm looking forward to it this weekend. I'm pretty excited about it.
Well, thank you, Karen, for your time tonight and answering our questions. We'd like to thank everyone for calling and listening in and for especially sending in your questions. If you have sent one before and it hasn't been chosen yet, you still have that question, send it again and give Karen a chance to answer that next month. So please send them in to Karen. CanWeTalk@KarenScholl.com, and you can go on our website at www.KarenScholl.com and listen to previous teleseminars from the other months. So thank you, everyone, for joining us, and have a very nice evening.
Thanks, everybody. I really appreciate it, and have a happy Thanksgiving. We'll talk to you again in December.